The Producers, featuring the most respected international talent in the world of audio production and voiceover. Radio, TV, film, and online. In-depth interviews, industry insights, putting you on the inside. This is The Producers Podcast with Ryan Dream.
All right, podcast time. I am excited to have these guys on. I'm not going to spend too much time in the intro. I have a couple of people to promote. Maybe, well, at least one. I said a couple without thinking. I have it. Definitely one to promote. I will tell you a little bit about who we're talking to. This is episode 79. We're getting real close to 100. I don't know. I think I'm going to have to start planning. It'll be next year. It'll be in 2016 when I hit episode 100. But I should start planning something big, right? That would be smart. If I was a good podcaster, perhaps I would do that. Any suggestions, obviously I take them. I get emails all the time, always exciting. Lots of requests come in. David Lee, who was the most recent episode, David Lee, he was requested a few times and finally got that one hooked up. Ended up being a great episode. Great feedback on that. So I always love the feedback and the requests and the emails, etc. On the website, there are plenty of ways for you to contact me. So I don't need to go into all that. In fact, let me start by telling you who is coming up. I have actually contacted multiple people, but Mitch Faulkner is going to be upcoming. And when I mentioned that in the last episode, that he'd be down the road, a number of people reached out to me saying, yes, that's awesome. I can't wait. So that's exciting. I'm glad to at some point get that put together. Anyway, Brian Apple, I mentioned him in the past. His schedule's so crazy, and he is, I don't know what, six or seven hours away from me. So a little bit more difficult to line up an interview like that. But Brian Apple's also on the radar. That could be, you know, still a couple few months away. And then I've got a few other emails out, as I've mentioned. Nobody I can really say is set in stone right now. So that's all for the pre-promotion. Let's tell you quickly about the guys that we're going to talk to today, and then we'll dive into the interview. I have actually plenty of great audio from the guys who are the purveyors of Imaging Blueprint. Tom Cross, Adam Burgess, and these individuals also reside on the friend side of people that I interview, which is always fun. That's just to say that, I mean, I'm friendly with everybody that I talk to, but some people that I talk to are complete strangers before we speak, and others I've hung out with and friends with, you know, had pints with, as it were. So these guys reside on the friend side of that. Anyway, great individuals, really nice guys, fun dudes, but also really talented and have also now worked on just about all sides of production as it relates to radio imaging. So they've, you know, been in the brick and mortar radio stations. We're talking New Zealand, London, other places in Europe and the UK, I should say. And then they now are operating their own shop, dealing with stations on that end. They also run a pretty major barter service now. So they can kind of talk about the industry from all sides. Imaging Blueprint, if you're not familiar with, is a relatively new CHR service. They actually developed it for quite some time, as in years, before they launched it internationally. And I say that from the standpoint of an American. They launched it internationally first, and they have moved into the States in recent months, and maybe it's probably been at least a year now that they've been represented in the States. So anyway, these are them guys. They're also Contraband Media. We'll get into all their background as we dive into the interview. But they do lots of custom work for stations and networks across Europe, in the States, and elsewhere around the world. So, very skillful radio imaging producers I shall be chatting to in moments. First, we'll hear some audio. I will put the long-form versions of these demos up on my website. There'll be a show notes page for this episode. Not always a need for a show notes page, but for this one, I'll put the full demos on that, and I will give you some links to their products and their pages, because I think it is warranted with these guys. But for right now, we'll hear a sampling of some audio. First, you will hear Tom Cross. Then I'll quickly jump on and say, and now it's Adam Burgess time. And then we'll get into the interview. And here we go with Adam Burgess and Tom Cross.
1, 2, 3.
Number one
for dance R&B.
G-A-L-A-X-Y.
Keep it locked to the number one station.
Hey, what's going on? This is Outkast right here. Keep it locked.
1, 2, 3. Here we go.
She loves me so, and this I know for sure.
Let's do it.
Number one for dance and R&B. Check this out, Galaxy.
Galaxy.
Oh, yeah.
Galaxy 102.2's stunning.
No. It's cunning stunts.
Sorry, okay.
Galaxy 102.2's stunning.
No, it's cunning, not stunning. Cunning stunts.
Okay, sorry.
Galaxy 102.2's cunning stunts.
That's it. Carry on, you foul mouth.
And now let's hear some audio from Adam Burgess.
Live across the UK.
The Big Top 40 Show.
Capital
FM.
Wake up in the morning with Johnny and Lisa. Got my glasses. Now, London, tell me, are you ready to party? Before I leave, brush my teeth.
Capital.
Yeah. Hey, how does your stick compare to other sticks? Not getting the attention you need? Has the wear and tear of time made your stick feel old, tired, and unfashionable? Well, why not transform your stick into a disco stick with our special Gaga glitter rubber cover? You'll be the center of attention at any party. You'll be beating off the crowd. There'll be no more room on this ride.
I want to take a ride on your disco stick.
This has been another spoof Lady Gaga advert. These are not real adverts or in any way associated with Lady Gaga. Of course, you know this. You're not stupid. It's just a competition where you can win free money.
Find our Gaga.
With Sunderland College. With a great choice of courses, you can be what you want.
Starts next week.
Metro Radio.
Here's a quick sample of Imaging Blueprint, March 2015.
Imaging Blueprint.
Every second is a highlight.
Listen.
Monthly highlights.
March.
Lay out blueprint plans on you.
Hit music.
What's up? It's Ariana Grande. One station. All the hits.
Right here.
C100.
You heard it like this.
Check it out. You ready?
I need to tell you something.
Hi, this is Carly Rae Jepsen, and you're listening to
All the Hits. Let's go, let me go.
I really want to stop, but I just got.
Hey guys, I'm Iggy Azalea.
Hi, it's Jennifer Hudson, turning you up.
New York's hit music station.
C100.
Let's go.
And an episode that I have been looking forward to now for months and months. These guys finally got their act together. No, I'm kidding. A studio was built. They're finally together. And it's going to be a big one for me because I not only like both of these guys' work over the years, but I now consider them both friends. Tom Cross, Adam Burgess, Imaging Blueprint, Contraband Media, soccer fans of Southampton, or maybe I'll say football for your intents and purposes. Hey, guys, thanks for being on the show. Appreciate it.
Hello. It's lovely to be here. And, I think you're right. We finally have got our acts together. Blame us. Absolutely.
Thanks for your patience, Ryan.
No. I actually knew when we had first finally decided. Oh, you know, actually, Tom, I think you were the first one. I said, hey, this is years ago at this point. I'd love to talk to, you know, you and your team. And you were kind of like, I don't really want to be in the spotlight, but maybe I can get some of my team. Well, then all sorts of professional things changed. And, you know, you had, I believe at that point, now it's been a few years, but you moved back to the UK. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah, so I've been back 3 years now. At the time, I was in New Zealand when I was chatting to you. Yes.
So I guess, you know, without me going on and on about how we finally got this set up, let's just dive right back in or right into the background. Maybe Tom, we'll start with you since I already brought you up and I mentioned New Zealand and UK, but tell me where you were born, maybe your first job in broadcasting, and then just bullet point a couple of major highlights for me.
And your first girlfriend, please. I need to know this information.
Well, that's truly not radio talk, but God. Well, I'm from the South Coast, a place called Winchester, which is near Southampton, hence why I support the mighty Southampton or Saints, as Ryan now knows. He's a big fan too.
They're my second team.
Well, yeah.
Burnley still can't be your first. Come on, Ryan.
Yeah, yeah. We can talk EPL later. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we digress. Sorry. Sorry, Tom.
There's a few radio stations in that area, but my first kind of station I worked for was called Power FM, which was the big CHR station at the time. And that's where I met Adam, because Adam started a few months prior to me joining. And we were both weekend producers, tech ops, slaves, you know, anything, pretty much anything to stay in the door. We were, what age were we, 18, 17?
I was 16 when I started.
So I was 18 and I was at college as well. So just left school. Between school and university and going to the radio station in my spare time, giving up weekends, just learning about how it all worked. I was fascinated in it. I listened to it all the time. And there wasn't a huge amount of option for local radio. We had Power FM, which was the big competitor, Radio 1 in the area. And apart from that, you had no other chance of getting in the door because no one else was interested, really. So that's why I learned a lot of my stuff. And I was there for a couple of years. Me and Adam worked there for a couple of years together. And then after that, I went to university, did a bit of student radio in Leicester at De Montfort University. I wasn't there for that long because I applied for a job and I went to work in Leeds for a network called Galaxy, which is actually at the time was a real, real privilege to work there because it was a massive radio network, dance formats, R&B as well. Those two formats were very big at the time. The music scene was huge. The radio station had a big following in Leeds itself, which is not a big city, but a big enough area. The radio station had an audience over 1 million, and that was considered a real big thing back then. This is 2003, mm-hmm. and I got to work with some really talented people and learned a hell of a lot. So I first learned Pro Tools there, actually. I didn't use Pro Tools before that. I was a Cool Edit Pro man, Adobe Audition on my laptop. But Pro Tools is where I learned there, and yeah, haven't looked back since.
You mentioned that you got into Pro Tools in 2003, but had you been producing some form of imaging since day one, or were you one of these guys that sort of started on the air and then found his way over to the production studio?
It's actually at Power FM. Me and Adam used to set ourselves tasks. We would get copies of the voiceover from the producer at the station and literally make the weekend promo, the giveaway promo, and we'd challenge ourselves and see who can make the coolest or most creative promo. Cool. And we used Cool Edit Pro. You know, we had Peter Quisgard as our copy.
Yeah. I think Peter Quisgard.
Yeah.
God bless Peter Quisgard.
So we just tried everything. You know, if I listen back now, it'd be appalling, the audio. But it wasn't about that. It was more about learning what you could do to audio, because for us, it was something brand new. And I look back then and I think some of the creative things me and Adam did was quite incredible, really. The processing was diabolical, but some of the techniques we learned was fantastic, and
you know,
I think that really helped.
It's funny when you listen to your really, really old stuff or your first stuff, and it can make you cringe, you know, at just how bad it is technically. But it is funny how some of our best creative ideas are when we first start out, and then for whatever reason, it's more difficult to have those earth-shattering creative sparks.
Well,
the more years you're in.
I guess back then you're raw and you haven't been sitting under a PD or a, you know, some form of management for so many years. So it's just what you think is right. It's your natural.
There's no limitations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's an element of that for sure.
So Adam, why don't we move over to you? I know that you've had a couple of high profile jobs and now I guess I already know where you started out in the business, and it sounds like you started at 16, but tell me a little bit about your beginnings and then some of the big time gigs that you hit along the way.
Okay, well, to recap quickly without trying to bore anyone out there. As you heard, I started with Tom. I moved on to Manchester as my first full-time job after that to a station called Key 103. Where I was there for a year or so. Key is a very big heritage station. For a long time was the number one station in Manchester for years and years. Struggled a bit in recent years, as all heritage stations have done, unfortunately. which is something which I don't think is unique to the UK. I think a lot of heritage radio stations are, around the world have. After my time there, moved to Bristol, which I will probably say is my happiest time in staff radio as a staffer for a company. Although I in that one production room, I was there for 3 or 4 years, and it changed hands. It was originally GWR. Then after the first merger, it turned to GCAP. And then it was in my later days there was Global, which, as you probably as you will know now, is the big player in commercial radio in the UK that owns the Heart and Capital brands. But while I was there, I mean, I got to work with some really really fantastic people, and colleagues and friends for life. Without sounding kind of too cheesy on that. Our music guy, Small Pool, I lived with there, who is a phenomenal talent, and I'm sure we'll talk about him a bit later as well. The Australian guys, Duncan, who works for Kiss, and Surfy. I think he Chris Crickmay, Surfy was his nickname. He was the Aussie guy who works for Nova, I believe, at the moment. Yeah, it was just, it was a real family kind of atmosphere. We were servicing 42 radio stations, a few digital stations. And in the later days there, I was heading up all of the imaging for those stations. We did, I think it was all 40 or 42 radio stations as a rebrand, which was... new voice, new sound design, new imaging and sweepers, which I think I might be right in saying is the biggest in UK radio history. Maybe bigger in Europe or elsewhere. I don't know.
So just to get a little background on that scenario, did you rattled off a couple other names there. And how many different imaging producers were in-house handling 42 stations and then ultimately that rebrand? You know, how many different producers were in charge of all that?
Let me go through my head quickly and count the studios that we had there, because we had different producers come and go in that time, as you can imagine. I would say there's probably six or seven at a time based in Bristol in those studios, churning out whether it be imaging or promos, competitions, show production.
Did that setup ultimately become what Global Radio has in? I'm forgetting the name of the square, the super famous square that their facility is in London.
In Leicester Square in London.
Leicester Square, sorry. So did that whole deal with the 42 stations on the network and that large amount of producers ultimately move over to their facility at Leicester Square?
Yeah. It didn't happen straight away, but we were kind of drip fed over to London over a course of time. Some guys didn't want to make that transition to London. And there was still a lot of change to be had once we had all got to London. And so those 42 radio stations were then kind of broken up, and some were put in the Capital basket, some were put in the Heart basket.
Sure.
And then there were different heads of production, different programmers, different guys overseeing these networks. I think I'd be quite fair in saying it was... it was an exciting time. It was a bit of a scary time when a lot of this consolidation happens.
So you had no problem making the move to London. You were in Bristol living there and doing great work, and they moved you and said, you know, let's go to London. You said, yes, let's go. Were you excited about that move?
I was really excited about it. For me, the thing is, the UK is so small and the industry is pretty small over here. So for me, it was kind of back to my old stomping ground slightly, having grown up on the South Coast. London was only an hour up the road. So, and it's the number one market.
Yeah.
So it's exciting. You know, you want to get there. And I then moved across to Capital very quickly within, it's all a bit of a blur now, but probably within the first 4 or 5 months of being there. there was the guy, one of the guys who was overseeing our department, a guy called Gareth Andrews, who's a lovely gentleman. He moved over to programming Capital, and I pretty much went with him and joined the team there in Imaging Capital. Sorry, I digress. What was the question?
No. I think we got there. I would assume the move to Capital, and of course, we'll talk about your guys' own endeavors outside of the brick and mortar radio stations in a bit. But your move to Capital would be considered the biggest in-house radio station move / network move, correct?
Absolutely. In Heritage, I guess at Bristol with the rebrand of the network. And at that point, I also rebranded the National Chart Show. So those were pretty big things to do, I guess, if you look at them on a scale of listening figures.
Yeah.
But then, you know, Capital is, for me, it was always Capital as a teenager, as someone getting into radio and getting into production. It was it wasn't Radio 1. It wasn't any of the other big London stations. It was Capital. That was the big station with the heritage, and that was the one that I wanted to work for. And so, yeah, it ticked off that box moving there. It was phenomenal.
And I want to move back over to Tom in just one second, but pardon my ignorance, but, you know, you're growing up down there by Southampton. I don't know if you said the town that you officially grew up in. Is that still down there near Tom?
Well, Tom was just outside. So Tom was Winchester, was just outside Southampton. I was in Southampton.
Okay. So, you know, does 95.8, the actual originating frequency, is that Capital? What is it called when you're young? Is that the one you'd listen to? Was that sort of like your dream station the whole way? And could you even hear it down there? I'm not totally familiar with the strength of signals and what they were over the course of decades.
It's always been that frequency. No, you couldn't hear it down here. But Power FM, where Tom and I started, was one of the smaller sister stations to Capital.
Okay. So, the same company.
So it always had its roots in Capital for many years. Now, as it does now, actually, it took re-sing of jingle packages, programming. Even though it was a standalone radio station, it was very much in the shadow of its big brother, which was Capital.
Great. All right. So, Tom, let's switch gears a little bit. You guys ultimately would leave the sort of in-house station experience, start your own endeavors. You can tell me a little bit about the Contraband Media, if that is where it started. But I'd also like to talk about what separates you two. So maybe give us a quick rundown, Tom, of how you guys first came together and to collaborate, and then we'll go on from there.
Well, we actually collaborated before I went to New Zealand. So I eventually moved down to Bristol as well when Adam was working down there. I moved down there in the end of 2005 to work for another dance station. This one was called Vibe. And then that's quickly changed to Kiss, became part of the Kiss family, as in the one in London, Kiss 100, which was always, for me, one of my biggest goals to work for Kiss. Adam wanted to work for Capital. For me, it was always about working for Kiss. Before I actually joined Bristol, we started working on some freelance projects together for some small radio stations, just doing imaging and bits and bobs like that. So we were actually in holiday together, I remember this, in Spain, by the beach, eating pizza, drinking beer, just chatting about what we'd call our company. And at that time, for some reason, we liked the name Eclipse. And Eclipse for us was the name we went for.
Which is awful now.
It's dreadful. And there's so many Eclipse, you know.
It's cringeworthy.
Eclipse this, Eclipse that. So for a long time, we used that as like a partnership name, and we did some nothing major. It was all kind of little fiddly jobs, you know, small imaging projects for £100 here, £100 there, nothing much. But it was the fun of doing something outside of work, challenging us, trying to get our work out there, our name out there as well. And then the Contraband thing really came about when Adam left Capital whilst I was overseas in, when was this, 2010, was it?
Yeah, I guess about 5 years ago now, yeah. So
you were playing Grand Theft Auto, weren't you?
I don't know if this is true or not, but I'm actually going to give a shout out to Brian Apple here. I was playing Grand Theft Auto, and there, as everyone knows, their in-game radio stations are phenomenal.
Hilarious, yeah. Imaging.
And I heard the word Contraband, and it resonated with me. And as simple as that, I thought, Contraband Media, that's kind of... Media companies, you can get away with outrageous names,
yeah.
You know, and not that it's hugely outrageous, But it was a bit of fun, and yeah, as I say, it really resonated with me, and that's where the name came from. Whether that, you know, I don't know whether Brian had anything to do with that at that point, but yeah, that's where the name comes from.
You mentioned Brian Apple's name. I might as well. I've been talking to him recently, and his schedule is extremely busy, but we're just locking in a date and a time to have an interview, so he'll be coming up very, very shortly on the podcast. So you guys start collaborating Contraband and you start working together on, you know, bigger, better projects. So Tom, why don't you start, before we get into the specifics of the companies, and we'll talk about Imaging Blueprint in a little bit also. You guys are both extremely talented, but in different ways, I assume. So maybe talk about some of your strengths and weaknesses and how they worked out to, or how they worked well with Adam.
Well, I find this quite hard, Ryan, because I think to talk about my own strengths sounds a little bit arrogant, and I'm not really that kind of guy. So I'd rather talk about Adam's strengths, if that's all right.
Okay, so you hype up Adam, and then Adam, you get ready to hype up Tom then. It'll be really comfortable. All right.
Well, the thing for me which works well with us, why we work well together, is because I think we do have slightly different styles, especially when it comes to audio. Adam is a very creative producer. He spends hours and hours and hours, which sometimes drives me insane because we've got a big list of stuff to do. I'm going, just get on with it. But he won't. He's stubborn, but he does brilliant work. So I really admire that. And he wants to get it done before he moves on to the next task, which is very admirable. He's extremely passionate as well, which helps. Sound design is something that he's been doing, I think, to a very high level now for probably a good 6-7 years. And he used to listen to loads of sound design from, you know, all Jeff Thomas and all these guys are the greats, and really study what they did, listen and think, how can I do that? How can my sound design stand up to these guys? So that's one thing he's worked on. And I say he's incredibly passionate about having a sound when it comes to sound design. You know, this sound design is such a generic word,
yeah,
or two words, but you know, it's you can tell from listening to a piece of sound effect who's made it, I think.
Why don't I let Adam jump in real fast here, because you're talking about sound design, and I've always found it fascinating that especially some of the noises that we have made for our radio imaging, you know, sometimes they can be rather inorganic, and it's like, how do you create that sound, which is totally fake, but it's so useful, and it does its job well, you know, what how do you approach that, making the noises that we use?
It's a good question. It's a very open question. As Tom said, I have been doing this for a long time. And you get within radio, you get your jingle geeks, your anoraks, and imaging guys. And for some reason, I don't know why, but mine was sound design. And so absolutely hats off to Jeff Thomas, because it was the kilohertz stuff that I was listening to all those years ago that got me into it.
We had it at Power FM back in 2003, where I think we had his...
I think it was kilohertz 2 at that
kilohertz
point.
2 and 3 series. Yeah, even us. This is a long time ago.
Mm. And so my first attempts at it were pretty shocking. Like anyone, I think it sounded pretty awful. It was a huge learning curve. I'm guessing what you're looking for is how it's done, or what processes I use, or where I get those sounds from. The sounds have become richer over the years, because I will constantly smash and abuse sound, and it'll add its layer upon layer upon layer to the point where I don't even recognize where it started.
Mm-hmm.
And that will then go into the next piece, which will be mixed in, EQ'd, whatever I'm doing to it. I first started on a Virus TI keyboard. It was outboard equipment, and it was phenomenal. It had the most incredible sounds. And I would run through the different banks of sounds, and I would hit Pro Tools into record, and I would take all the glitches, mm-hmm, and all the sweeps, and all the manipulation, and the signals and the pops and the crackles and the And I would probably do that for 20 minutes, half an hour, and just mess with it. Just change all the parameters. And out of those 20 minutes, I might be lucky if I got 3 or 4 minutes of something that sounded disgustingly beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was probably where I started. To be honest, I don't use the virus that much anymore. Purely because it's for the stuff that I'm creating each week for Imaging Blueprint. I like to get my hands on stuff quickly now. And so most of it is in the box purely because of the way that we operate now.
I'd be curious to know if you've, I actually just finally, and believe it or not, it was in Nashville of all places. I finally had occasion to meet Jeff and hang out with Jeff in person for a long period of time. Cause yeah, he's one of the guys that I really look up to. Have you had occasion to actually sit down with him and discuss, you know, the intricacies of making sound design? Has that ever happened for you?
You know what the funniest thing is? I haven't, but Tom has.
I'm one of the lucky ones.
Yeah, I'm a bit jealous on that one because when Tom was in New Zealand, he
we did Kilohertz 5. We had that series, and so Jeff was very kind enough to invite me and the team across to Australia to go to his home studio in Sydney. Mm-hmm. And just spend the day with him. It was fantastic. You know, he was such a nice guy. And he showed us around his Pro Tool sessions, how he did stuff. He went through all his Howard Stern imaging as well, which was great for me because I loved that. Mm-hmm. And just to spend time with the guy, and he was just so open to anything. You know, ask him any question. He was a cool guy, a really cool guy. So he's been doing it a long time as well. And very, very laid back.
You know, maybe we'll take a step forward here because I told you guys before this that the chats can just go off in tangents and we can talk this stuff forever. Let's move right into Imaging Blueprint because this is a service you guys have spent a lot of time on, and I've known you at least as long as you've had this service going. I don't know. Why don't we start just maybe, Tom? Why don't you just give us the bullet points on what Imaging Blueprint is?
I would say Imaging Blueprint is an artist-led updating production service. So we really focus on what the newest music is, the biggest artists, and try and cater that to our clients. So all the latest branded intros focus heavily on making the newest branded intros and getting them up there as soon as possible so people can use them however and whenever they like.
And what else is involved, though? You know, I'm a subscribing station. I assume you're geared more at stations versus producers, correct?
I think what I guess Tom means with artist led is the way that we look at it is it's not so much about just the out of breaks or just the top of hours, or we dedicate sections to artists. So the big heavy hitters, in our layout, and that's a big difference compared to, you know, the competitors out there. And having used these services while we've been at radio stations, it was a case of going, well, CHR radio, it only needs so many elements. It needs its music, it needs its sound design, it needs its drops. Can you reinvent the wheel? Not hugely, but can you take a different standpoint at it? Can you plug in the gaps that aren't being plugged? Is that filled, plugged? It's a pretty donkey way of saying it. And that, I think that was our challenge, and it was looking at the services out there, our friends and producers around the world that use these services, and going to them, hey guys, what don't you get from them, and what do they do really well?
Yeah.
And I think that was probably the birth of where we wanted to go.
Yeah. So I always like to have as honest of a discussion as humanly possible, you know, and everybody, you know, you're selling something, and that's great. But, you know, from start to now, you obviously had expectations. You know, we want to start this, and I think you launched over there in Europe first, and then it took you guys a long time to find your way into the States. What were your expectations, and if you can be as honest as possible, how well did it work out from what you hoped for, or what were some of the difficulties you had along the way? Because I think there are people that are very interested in how these services start out.
When we first started out, we actually reached out to Dave Fox, because I'm sure, as you know, we use Z100 as our demo station.
Yeah.
And Dave said to us, good luck. A lot of these either don't get off the ground or they will run their course very quickly because they're hard to do. You know, it's hard to keep something updating weekly, daily, whatever it may be.
Did you start by going with a cash model and were you going to just focus on Europe? Or was your goal to get to a barter model in the States or somewhere in the middle?
Do both. We wanted to do both, really. It was offering service to anyone and everyone around the world. And the barter model is fantastic, but it's not the only model. I think we didn't want to make our service too American-focused. I think there's great imaging everywhere.
Yeah, and we wanted to keep it very balanced across the board.
Yeah.
For us, the barter wasn't the be-all and end-all. There's a whole rest of the world out there. Honestly, our passion drove it forward at the beginning. We were working on this nearly 2 years before it even saw the light of day. We had close friends in the industry that once we launched and we had Premiere representing us internationally, they went, oh, wow. I didn't see that coming, you know, because we just got our heads down and got on with it.
Yeah. Dedication and hard work, it really did help for that. Yeah. But also, we didn't want to tell people until it was ready because you can talk about something, but you've got to show it as well. And then until we were ready, we weren't going to discuss it.
I remember when you had emailed me about it, and I remember thinking, you know, great, all right, another CHR service. Not like we have 100 of those already. You know, cool.
That's the challenge, and, isn't it?
But yeah, it was. I think I was one of the first people you had told about it, or had just sort of said, hey, this is going to be coming. What do you think? And it was at least a year or two until it was actually out there. And then I was impressed.
I think you were one of the first person to know about it, actually. We kept it very quiet because... Yeah, we didn't want to be another one of these, you know, conversations. Oh, what's happened to this? Where's it gone? You know, people have great ideas all the time, but you can have a great idea, but you've got to actually do it if you want it to work.
The proof is in the pudding, as they say.
Absolutely. And I know that you guys are ultra focused on quality, which is important. And, you know, a lot of services either decide, you know, we're going to go quantity and the quality will sort of find its way. And, you know, or we're going to maybe focus a little more on quality and the users will be all right if they don't get as many cuts every month. You know, where did you find your balance to resolve to, or at least at this point, now that you're at least a couple years in, you know, where's your balance and how much content are you putting out? And do you ever decide, I'm not going to put out as much this month because I did so much work on this batch of stuff. It just took more time, you know?
No, that's never... That I don't think that's an acceptable way of thinking with regards to these kind of services. I mean, we had that discussion last night with we were creating a branded intro, and it floated past our heads for some reason. We went, well, we've got X amount up this week. We could put that to next week's. And then we looked at each other and went, that's ridiculous. No, we'll do something else next week. This goes up now. Yeah. I don't think in this market, with, as you said, with so many CHR services out there, that you can afford that luxury.
Upload it and move on.
Yeah, it's disposable. Yes, there's absolutely a quality threshold. I'm very guilty for being a bit, can I say this? I'm very, very anal about a lot of stuff.
How dare you?
Sorry. It's gone up from a PG-13 to a 15 rated podcast now. there has to be this balance, and you know, there are services out there that put a lot of quantity out there, and we've used those services, and I personally feel that that's great if that works for them, but for me, that's album filler. That's not a hit record.
Yeah.
So having grown up with in the industry with Kilohertz, for instance, which is 99 tracks on a CD, and being able to image a whole radio station with a package that came off of a CD. It's been a real learning curve from not that mindset, but knowing that you could do it with that, and then speaking to the other guys out there that just want content,
new stuff all the time.
Must have new stuff. And you think to yourself, well, yes, we will absolutely provide that new stuff, but what are you using? I mean, where is it going? Because we've only been in the industry for about 15 years, which is a long time, but there are still guys in the industry that have been in it for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And you can make do with the quality stuff, and I know you can, and we have done.
Well, that's the attitude of the past, isn't it? It's about when we were younger and working at the station, it was you got by with what you had. Now, I think the attitude has changed. People want more. It's always wanting more. Why should I have to go through 4,000 files on my hard drive when I know I'm going to get 20 new ones? Well, we want to kind of remind people that there's a lot of good stuff on our site. You don't necessarily have to find the newest stuff. If you, the way the site's laid out and the way you can search through it, you can easily find stuff that was uploaded a year ago without wasting hours.
I think it's without a doubt. One of the biggest problems is the quantity issue, but the fact that now you've had services that have been out there for 10 plus years and they've been piling content and they never get rid of any of it. So they can say, we have 112,000 files. What do they have? And a lot of producers are kind of like, wow, that's a lot. I guess I'm going with that one.
That is a way of looking at it, and it kind of makes us chuckle a bit.
Why don't I say that? Like, how do you sell the quality factor? You know, you may sell quality versus quantity. How do you guys gain new clients and sell the quality factor? And I know you guys put out lots of content, but still, how do you go about doing that?
I think a lot of people just get it. I think a lot of the established producers that have been in this game for a long time, I think they get it. There's no pulling the wool over their eyes if they're using another service. And people have been very honest with us, and we have obviously got clients on board now that have used other production services in the past and have come over to us and have gone, oh wow, you do this differently to those guys. And I wouldn't even say that we don't put as much.
I would say we'd put the same up as the car competition, I'd say.
Yeah.
I don't say we have less numbers.
Yeah, and I don't want to stay ultra-focused on that. I just want to make it clear that, this is a service that people should look at. I mean, obviously, I'm having you guys on because you're respected producers in the industry, but also you happen to be operating a service that I wish I could be a subscriber of.
That is actually that's an important thing, Ryan. I think when we were both users of these services, we are, in a way, making a service that we would have loved to have used. So I think that's one of our main goals. But just going back to what you said before, in terms of how we make our service stand out, SoundCloud's been a marvelous tool for us. I think for imaging guys especially, that is a great way to demonstrate what you can do and to show off your quality as well. Because you can put your demos up there whenever you like. We could do one every single day if we wanted to, which would be stupid. But the point is, we can do them. Adam makes his wonderful monthly highlights of demonstrating what we've done that month. And it can be quite hard to choose what audio to put up just because we've made a lot of content that month. But
for us, I mean, as you say, you wanted honesty. We don't have the revenues that a lot of the big companies that have been going, as you say, for 10 years. We don't have those revenues yet. We'd like to think at some point. Great. And so we have to think smart. Okay, so how do we get our content out there? How do we get people to engage with it? How are we going to, hopefully draw more clients in? As Tom said, SoundCloud's phenomenal at that. And so we do put monthly highlights up. And if some people just want to digest it and hopefully it will inspire them.
Yeah, that's great.
Good on them. Great. It's thrilling to have had an impression, and it genuinely is.
So two things that have come immediately to my mind. The first one is SoundCloud. Can you give us some tips? It's hard to build a social audience. Is there anything that you did or do to build up that audience on SoundCloud that others might say, oh, that's a good idea? Some secrets you want to let go?
I think the only thing I would say about that is you, the way you tag the audio as well. I think you mention what you've put up there. Tag the information that you've used in the audio. So if you used a Britney Spears intro, tag Britney Spears. You know, it seems obvious, but it is. Yeah. And also be consistent. Put your CHR, put your name of the company also in the tags as well. Be consistent with how you label your audio, the logo you use, the naming conventions, stuff like that. So it all feels very familiar every time people come to your page.
Actually, you'll be surprised, or maybe not, even the big guys that, I say the big guys in inverted commas, that aren't consistent with that kind of stuff. And because this is our baby, we are, and we make sure that we are. And we try and be very hard on ourselves with that kind of consistency as well.
If you knew then what you know now, you would have done what differently?
Got a real job. No, I wouldn't have changed it for the world. Over to you, Tom.
Yeah, maybe address it more of like when you started either Contraband Media or when you went on your own in some capacity, either starting Imaging Blueprint, Contraband Media. If you had just only known this then, you know, it would have been that much better for you. Well, finish that.
Oh, I don't know. I've quite enjoyed learning stuff as we've gone along, really.
It's, yeah. I think when we got signed with Premiere, I think we were under enforcement. In an ideal world, I think we were going to get signed and it was going to be amazing and we were going to be out there. And this kind of goes back to what you were saying about SoundCloud. How to build an audience. There's no cheat sheet for it, well, unless you're going to buy your audience, which is ridiculous, because then you're only cheating yourself. But we've been on there what 3 years now, I think it is, on SoundCloud, and we're about reaching 300 followers. I think that's what they call it on SoundCloud, is it? Followers. You know, we launched, and it took a long time for them to come.
Yeah, no one was paying attention at first, but then why would you expect that?
You know, and I guess these guys, a lot of station producers maybe aren't always looking for a service. If you've got one and you're signed up for a year, then you're probably not going to look for the best part of that year until you maybe want to think about taking the plunge and going for a different service. And even if you do, you know, that means a whole rebrand. It means getting the old stuff on air, getting the new stuff. It's a big task.
People don't always like to change. It's more hassle to change than what they've currently got.
Yeah, right. And it might be that you absolutely want to change, but then you think about all the work and all the time you don't have. Yeah. And yeah, I was just, as a person who's also operating a service, I was just going to add in, it can be slower than you anticipate, and it can be slow for reasons you just don't see coming. You know, you can have 10 different people at big stations tell you that they love what you're doing and they can't wait to be on, and a year will go by and they're like, well, you know, I got to get it through the PD and the OM and the GM, and then I've got corporate PDs, and then I'm already in a deal with XYZ company for another 13 months, and you know,
and we've had all
it's startling.
Yeah, we found that we've had some of these American contracts take months, and you think, why is the producer screaming at you for a login? You go, yeah, but it hasn't been signed off yet. But you're still waiting for the operations manager to send back the signed contract to agree the BASA window. It's like, come on, guys, why is someone not signing it? And this guy's gone on holiday for a month.
Yeah.
And people might not know that, you know, legal departments are obviously involved in these. And, you know, if you're doing a deal with a CBS station, the clauses they want into their contracts are so different from an iHeart station or from a Cumulus station. They're all difficult to deal with, but they're just difficult in completely different ways. So there's a lot of business and technical stuff that goes into this stuff, right?
Going kind of a little bit back to what you were saying earlier, learning curve, and it's also the stuff that isn't just the audio. You know, it's the stuff that's running a business, and it's making sure your accounts are done. You know, and as we touched on marketing, it's all of those things that are outside of Pro Tools that
take time.
That take and you've got to learn that stuff as well. Yeah.
Just making sure your website runs fine.
Yeah, getting service, getting coders on to do stuff.
Yeah,
it's all time consuming. It's all learning curve. And it's a big ask. I couldn't have done this without Tom.
Well, the same for me.
He couldn't have done it without himself. You know, so, as a, as if I was a one man band trying to do this, I wouldn't be here. I need someone to pick up the phone to every day, or to bounce ideas off of. Otherwise, I'd go stir crazy.
Speaking of, I know it's the two of you that are officially the directors of the company, but at this point, I think you do, but do you have other people collaborating with you now? Do you have other people supporting you? Obviously, someone developing your sites, but as far as even on the accounting side, you know, what other kind of people do you have in your world there?
Well, we've got accountants. We've got Higgy, who is our web guy, who is a guru, absolutely incredible, mind-blowing, and I don't know half the stuff that he tells me.
He speaks in a foreign language.
Layman's terms, please, I don't get this. we have a handful of freelance producers that not only we trust, but we know their work, and we know that we can work with them at this stage.
Yeah.
And that runs from producers to composers to... session singers and session musicians and the rest of it,
and small Paul as well, who's our music man, who makes our music beds, and he's brilliant. This guy's worked for jingle companies, worked
small
music
Paul
for a jingle company before. Yeah, he's a brilliant composer.
His name is Paul Rushforth. His nickname is Small Paul, or Small, and that's what everyone knows him as. And he's a genius and a lovely, lovely human being. Used to work with Sandy Beach, who I know you interviewed probably nearly 2 years ago now.
Maybe four.
is it really? Wow.
Yeah. It's been a long time, yeah. But wow. Yeah, that's when I first heard about Small Paul, and now it's like about once every 6 months his name comes up, whether I'm at a convention talking to you guys on this podcast, you know, that's a guy I need to talk to someday, apparently.
Yeah, so he's out in Cyprus at the moment, and
is he with Sandy?
Sandy is out there.
He went there because of Sandy, I think.
He did, yeah, absolutely. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, good for him.
And he's enjoying the sunshine, and now he's heading up our music, and he's a phenomenal talent. And the guys that he used to mix for when he was in London in Soho. You know, like your Ollie Murs and your Robbie Williams and
Paloma Faith, I think he did as well.
Ed Sheeran and a few others. You know, his resume is incredible, and we're very blessed to have him as part of the team. He's a creative force to be reckoned with. Is Arsmall?
Yeah, that's great. You guys know I'm a huge fan of the Imaging Blueprint service. Continue to wish you luck with that. Let's switch gears a bit, though, because I tell you what, we could probably talk for 2 hours, right, the three of us.
Sorry. We did go on.
I wanted to do a little tech talk. I mean, you've both mentioned Pro Tools. I'm just going to make the assumption you're on some sort of really powerful Mac Pro Tools rig, or tell me what it is you guys like to edit in, what DAW and etc.
We're on Pro Tools, but we are not on the latest Pro Tools. We're still on Pro Tools 9. And the main reason for that is because it works.
It's very stable.
It's stable. It works for us. And I think there's a little bit of that fear in us. If we do change and it goes wrong, we don't have the time to fix it. I like it. I like the way it works. I like the way it looks, the way it functions.
I mean, a lot of people say to us, oh, what about the offline bounce of the new... But
11,
we can't... We don't have that luxury. If you're doing something, it has to be right when it goes up onto the website. So we listen to it, and we would do anyway. So to us, offline bounce is not really a thing that would interest us that much.
It's another chance to listen to your mix when you're bouncing it down, as far as I'm concerned. So,
And the number of times I've caught myself on a mix out, and I'm sure you have as well, Tom.
Without a doubt.
And gone, oh, need to change that.
Yep, start again.
So if
anything, it's good for that, I think.
Yeah, in the jingle world here, you know, at TM Studios, for example, I don't anticipate people here using offline bounce at all, because when you're mixing out packages that people have spent, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars on, they have to be perfect, and it's the same reasons. Yeah, I can see that. Now, the question I would have is if you guys have put any thought, or if you've researched into the new Pro Tools 12 specifically because of its collaborative abilities, the cloud-based stuff, and if you guys think that would have any value for you, because I know you both work in different locations.
I think it could do. I think we're very satisfied with the way that we do work at the moment, and we're totally happy with that. But it's one of those things where when you start to work a certain way, you become very stuck in your ways. And so, as Tom said, I've got in my studio here Pro Tools, it's HD9. I'm very happy with the way it works. It's incredibly stable. Touch wood. and you know, through our FTP sites or Dropbox or WeTransfer, we can get stuff to each other so quickly anyway.
Everything's backed up as well. And like when I saw you last, Ryan, in Amsterdam, we talked about cloud servers and
yeah.
And that's, I still need to look into that and do more of that.
That must have been a fun conversation. You were in Amsterdam, you were talking about cloud servers.
No, we were on the river, I hope I say it right,
London.
The River Thames.
Yes, we're in London. You're
right,
were
walking the River Thames, having a beverage, talking cloud servers.
Yes, what a bunch of nerds.
Yes.
Because you're the one who obviously knew more about it than myself. So, yeah, there's something we want to get into. But right now, we both have always been one to have lots of hard drives. And if we need to send something to each other, we can do it that way. You can zip stuff up quite small these days. Even a Pro Tool session, you can zip it up and transfer it quite easily. But I think Adam will speak for himself by saying, rather than spending money on new Pro Tools, he built himself a studio.
Yeah. Talk about some other audio tools you guys like. It was actually kind of a funny little thing going around. And at the imaging days, for example, everybody, show me your master. You know, everybody's talking about the master buses. But is there anything specific that you guys always do on the master bus? Well, we'll just start there.
The master's a funny one. There's no special button plugin that you can use that makes things sound good. It's what I'm sure a lot of the producers you've had over the years on this podcast have always said. It's the balance, it's the mix, it's getting things right.
You turn everything off, actually, don't we? You turn the master track on until you come to the final stage.
Yeah, the master, there are no active plugins on the master until we go to do the final mix and bounce on it. I have a few things on the master. I'm a big fan of linear phase EQs. They're very surgical. There's no coloration. So I have a linear phase EQ, but it's not doing that much. It's all down to the mix prior to that. And I have a compressor on there. Again, not doing a huge amount. A multi-band limiter. That's
a bit of reverb, actually, as well.
Depending on the project I'm working on, sometimes a little
sound
bit
design
of,
you wouldn't bother, would you?
On hits.
Okay.
Depending on...
On impacts.
On some impacts and some soft swipes. It's nice to put a bit of master reverb on there.
Well, what is the value of that? If you're going to put a reverb on your master, but it has, you know, almost an unnoticeable effect, what's the value of that?
Way of explaining it can frame the audio quite nicely. It can warm it up a bit.
Yeah, warmth, I think, is the key.
It can feel like it just kind of sets it back in the monitors slightly and gives it a little bit extra room. And to really hear that, you would have to, you know, A/B on off to get that. But
yeah,
it's just a presence that it can give.
Tell me the last time that you guys had a severe disagreement over something either technical or creative.
Probably the other day.
Tom probably said something stupid. go on, what was it about?
I don't remember.
The thing is, you know, we're boys. We forget about this stuff very quickly. And it's usually a creative thing. It's I think it should be done this way, but... No, I want it to be no, make sure the branded intro has this lyric in it, or you're going to do that. Or,
yeah.
And we're probably just being, you know, maybe a bit precious. I don't know. But within 5 minutes, it's forgotten. It's never that serious.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, we're both pretty good at giving each other room in terms of creativity. If Adam's making something, I'm not going to go, right, can you do it this way? Do it that way. I might go, here's the possible suggestions from my point of view. But whatever he does... It's because that's what he's done in the process of making it. And I think we're both pretty good with that. We give plenty of room to be creative and do what we want to do but under the kind of the guise of what we think's best. I think that's important, to believe in each other.
If it was forced to be said, you know, one of you is more, I mean, I have in my head who I kind of think it is, but if one of you is forced to keep the train on the tracks as far as the business goes, we have to get the content out, you know, just get done, get the work done, post it, you know, kind of keeping that train on the tracks, who would that be out of the two of you?
Are you trying to cause a fight now?
No, I'm just trying to, you know, get the dirt. Just trying to get the info.
Honestly, 9 times out of 10, it's probably Tom. I don't know if that's who you thought.
Yeah, although, absolutely who I assumed.
Yep. That's fine. I'm absolutely fine with that. And although at the weekend, we had the Easter weekend, and you were talking about putting something up, and we had a bit of a heated debate over
oh, that was a debate, yeah,
over consistency of what should be put up.
Yeah, Adam wanted to upload something on Easter Sunday.
No, Monday.
So Easter Monday,
yeah. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a Monday, unlike a few other services that we've noted, some don't do stuff over Christmas, and we set a precedent to ourselves, and we just work, even if we've done the work and we're parking it to put up over that period, we set a precedent to ourselves to always do that.
So officially to the world, Imaging Blueprint isn't going to take time off. That's, you know, basically what you're
absolutely
saying.
Absolutely.
Correct, yeah.
Absolutely.
Even,
you might have parked it, as you said, or produced it earlier. You want the perception to be that you guys are not taking time off. There's no holiday for you.
Even over Christmas, we will put stuff up on Christmas Eve. Maybe not Christmas Day, but over the holiday period, there's not like a 10-day period of there's no new audio. So, and actually, to go back after our heated debate, even though I was the one who didn't want the stuff going up, I did the work. So I just take the credit for that.
You saw sense.
But no, I think Adam's right. I think it's good to, if whether people would realize that or not, I think it's good for ourselves to be consistent.
Well, and if you guys aren't having these arguments, then it might indicate passion is being lost, and so it's just good to know that, you know, you still have a hardcore passion for what you do.
Yeah, I think so. We're only arguing because we both want what's best, and you know, we like anything. You know, we're friends from day one, so that's what matters. We can have disagreements. Everyone has disagreements, but we're friends from the start, and that's what matters. We're now business partners, but fundamentally we're friends, and we just have the same interest.
Just a couple questions left here. I wanted to ask one thing before I ask my final question, but it might sort of be the same. As far as, you know, you get so long into a like a skill set, you know, you've been producing audio for so long, it can seem like you might fall into just certain habits, and you kind of, you know, I know how to do that, I know how to add EQ to vocal, you know, I know how to treat vocal, whatever. What do you do to continually evolve your skill sets, or what resources do you utilize to continue to be better at what you do? Anything that you can bring up now?
I actually watch a lot of film trailers and TV commercials and try and see if there's any new techniques on those. Like, quite now in imaging, you know, people like to take vocals from other songs like a cappellas and put them, retune them over other tracks, instrumentals, remixes, etc. And that can sound really cool. I think it's been done a lot lately, and it happens to be one of these trends. So I'm kind of looking to see what other trends are out there.
Yeah.
See what else other people are doing. I think not necessarily in spoken in English language too. In Spanish and French. If you go to France, you'll hear some really cool imaging on their radio stations. The way they use the voices, the dynamics between the male and the female voices too, are really interesting. So I think it's taking yourself out of what you're used to hearing. Seeing, borrowing techniques from other industries, I think that's really important.
Anything to add, Adam?
Sometimes I think it's as important to go to look backwards as it is to as what Tom said there, as to look at what might be next or how media is doing stuff currently. There's a bunch of fine producers and who have influenced us over the past and growing up in this industry.
Yeah, definitely. They've been key, I think, too.
And again, like a guy that you've that you pretty much interviewed day one, Ben Needle.
Good
friend of mine. Phenomenal producer.
Unbelievable. His XFM work is just... I still listen back now and it still sounds fresh.
But that's what I mean. You know, I listen back to some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Some of the old Radio 1 imaging. And it's interesting to see where it's gone or what was in vogue to do back then. Some of those styles are still around.
I respect both of your opinions, and I think others do. I'm just curious if there's anybody that's, you know, currently producing imaging in, like, in your area that you can listen to, or just somebody that, you know, a station you can point out, and like Simon Palfreyman, or I probably said his name wrong. Sorry.
No, you said right. Yeah. I work with Palf. Yeah. I work with Palf at KISS.
You know, that's just an example. You know, he's heading up KISS over there. But, like, is there anybody local or even somewhere in the UK that you go, yeah, you know, that they're doing it? You know, that's the stuff.
Yeah, I think the guys at KISS are phenomenal. Ben Williams and Palf over at KISS are doing great audio. I think Chris Nicol and his team at Capital, they're churning out some fantastic stuff.
There's another guy in New Zealand actually called Grant Brody, who was my former boss, who's the head of production there for a station called The Edge, which is the Radio 1 equivalent, I'd say, in terms of musical styles in New Zealand. And he's a super creative guy. He can make all kinds of imaging. He can make funny imaging, dramatic imaging, cool imaging. He just nails it, and I've always been impressed with the way he can make audio.
There's a guy over in Orlando called James Steele, who works for AMP down there, and he often tags some of us on some of his SoundCloud bits. I love his imaging as well. He's got a lovely take on it.
He's one of these guys who's on air too, so he's on air and doing imaging.
Yeah, he's certainly one to watch.
In a big market too. And he's got a very funny sense of humor.
Yes.
I don't know him, but I think we're like, you know, internet friends, you know, the world today. You just have so many people you only know their picture and their typing.
Yeah, sure.
Dave Fox is another guy too. I think we both admire him for the fact that he's been in this industry and doing what he does for so long. I think it's incredibly impressive.
He doesn't seem to have lost really any of his passion either. And that's something to be commended. We were lucky enough to went on vacation to New York a couple of years ago, and as I'm sure a lot of the radio guys do, you go and see Dave, you have your station tour of Z100.
And
I found him totally charming, and
he gave up his time for us.
Lovely guy, you know. And since going on from there, obviously letting us use Z100 as the demo station for IB, he's a legend, and rightly so.
All around the world, people in imaging will know that voice.
Yeah, without a doubt. And there's certain people, and Dave is one of them at the top, where they're pretty confident, you know. And so when they talk about this business, they don't need to speak with grandiose terms. It's kind of like what I'm saying is what I believe to be right, and most people agree. So it's good to have those people in your lives. The final question, and you can answer however you want. I'll just throw it at you both. You know, if you're going to pick out one thing, one piece of advice for the youngsters of the world to be the next you, to be successful, you know, what would that be?
Cool. No one wants to be me. Jesus.
Somebody does.
Honestly, there's no formula to doing it. You've just got to have the right attitude and the right passion. I can honestly say that when I met Tom at Power FM, I saw a kindred spirit in that. And if you can find someone to bounce genuinely to bounce off of, which has worked for us throughout our career.
Yeah, it's definitely helped.
That's invaluable. But have the right attitude, have the right passion for it. Because you can't fake that.
I'd always say if you get the opportunity to work overseas, jump at the chance as well. For me, that's been fantastic. Not just for myself, but for, I think it's helped my career as well. Meeting more people, knowing more about the industry as well worldwide.
For you it was getting to go to New Zealand to work for a few years, and maybe for somebody in the States it would be having an opportunity to come to Europe to work.
Yeah, definitely. Just it doesn't necessarily, even if it's you think it's a demotion, it won't be. It's a life lesson. I think that's really important too. Learning an instrument is great. Learning about rhythm, about pitch. You don't have to be an amazing good player. You can just having the basic knowledge of how an instrument works, you'll make your imaging so much better rhythmically, and you understand tempo and key and pitch.
Yeah, I've had that brought up a number of times. That's a pretty cool piece of advice, because it's kind of where, like, going over to Europe last year and seeing what was happening, that was pretty eye-opening to see just how many people are ultra-focused on, you know, mixing in key, you know, everything having to do with the musicality of their imaging versus yeah. years past, where it was sort of train wrecking sounds together and making everything sound big
with
or
a big voice.
Putting everything on beat. Now we need to start working in key, and we need to start making everything musically sound. So I think that's a great piece of advice.
And the final one, sorry, Ryan, one more I would like to say is archive. And it's boring, but archiving is so important, because when you want to come back and reference something or get some inspiration, it's there waiting to happen. Otherwise, you're sifting through folders, going plugging hard drives in, trying to find that piece of inspiration, or trying to find that artist drop you need for this piece of imaging. If it's archived properly, you'll find it straight away.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I could add one thing to it's not so much for, you know, the youth. I mean, I think hopefully it will just apply to guys in radio stations, but something that I found really handy is archiving artist liners and getting the artist to do the liner while you're sorting their levels out. So you go in the studio, and before they've done their interview, before they've, you know, want to walk out the door and, you know, go, right, hi, Rihanna, right, mic's up, da-da. Can I just get you to read these liners out, and I'll get the level on those, and then you're away with the interview, and then you don't have to stop them in their tracks afterwards and keep them rooted to the chair to do your slogan, mm-hmm. your strap line, your station name, and all the rest of it. I found that really invaluable to get those things out the way first.
Yeah, that's actually interesting. I'm not positive I've heard that before, so cool. Well, guys, taking up so much of your time, although I know it is evening for you, thank you for joining me. You guys have been great. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan. I'm pleased we made this happen, finally.
Absolutely. It's been a real pleasure. I hope we haven't talked too much crap.
No, I don't think we'll have, I'll clean a little bit up. I'll take us back down to PG-13. But but seriously, it was really good. As you said, I'm glad we got it all worked out. All the best to you guys both, okay?
Thank you so much, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right, that'll do it. Thanks, guys, one more time, as I always like to do. Thank you so much for your time. This one was, actually, they facilitated this episode better than I did, in that we were all in three different locations. They met each other at Adam's studio, got it all set up for me, and it made it a much easier interview than some of my international interviews have been. They've all been great, of course, but it's just the technical side of it can be a little bit difficult. But this one was great, and thanks to those guys, Adam and Tom. Just a quick reminder, as we round it out here, there is a show notes page for them where you can hear longer form demo audio, but you also might just want links to their stuff, and there are links to their stuff on the show notes page as well. Upcoming, I can tell you for sure, I've been in touch with Mitch Faulkner. We've shared some emails, and I will be, in fact, probably right now going and sending him an email. Hey, man, let's schedule it up. So we'll get him up on the show. And then I have emails out to a few people already, which we are just discussing. We're sorting out schedules. One of them I've mentioned, Brian Apple, you know, he's a go. It's just literally a matter of figuring out his time. A very busy dude, who actually moved over to Ireland. Forgetting for some reason right now. I believe he's in Ireland now. Let's see here. I've got a few others that I have actually, as I was putting together this episode, that I wanted to fire off some emails to, but I always take the suggestions. The fact of the matter is, I know a lot of people in the industry, but I don't know everybody. Without a doubt, I don't know everybody. And there's even been an occasion where there was there's at least one really big name that I just wasn't familiar with. Poor, you know, dumb me. I just wasn't familiar with him. And ended up being one of the coolest interviews I ever had, and also ended up being a pretty big one. So if you'd like to suggest something, send it my way. And you can go to my website, ryanontheradio.com. Also, theproducerspodcast.com takes you there, too. That'll take you directly to the podcast stuff. But just hit me up with a contact form or an email. I'd love to hear from you, and that'll do it for now. I'd say I've said enough, haven't I? Thank you. Talk to you later. Bye.
Contact the show, contribute your opinions, see additional content, or simply stay connected at producerspodcast.com.